And soy gold.
Who's the most fun to drink with of the Republican lawmakers? And soy gold. Todd Alba did decide to text us who's fun to get a drink with in the GOP.
Fantastic. And soy gold.
Todd also confirmed that Robin Voss has virtually no sense of humor.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the noon hour of Hump Day Wednesday. We got Jane Madnair, Greg Bach. I am Kristen Bry. And we are welcoming back our dear friend, Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area, to have a little bit of a debrief because you skipped town right after the election last week. And so we haven't even gotten to talk to you about your feelings about that. You're freshly shaven, which is exciting. And I guess my first question out of the gate, though, is are you ready for another election to just start talking about that already?
No, of course I'm not ready for this. But of course, this is Wisconsin. So it doesn't matter if we're ready for it or not. It's coming. It's coming for all of us.
So there is no break. But
ominous.
We talked about it a little bit at the top of today's show because it was, I think, some of the breaking news. Maybe not surprising for everyone, but Tammy Baldwin is running again. And we had thrown around the question, and I don't think we came up with a good answer of who we think will run against her. Do you have thoughts or ideas on who you think will run against her, Dan Schaefer?
I do. I think we've already heard a couple names floated out there. We heard David Clark, which everyone has to be thrilled with on the right in Wisconsin. We had, Scott Perry, who's the businessman from Franklin? I don't even remember. Or Scott Meyer. I'm sorry. Scott Meyer.
Yeah, I remember hearing that name.
Who's businessman from Franklin. That name had gotten floated out there. The name I'm watching, though, is, I guess, two names that I'm watching. One is Mike Gallagher, because yeah. I think he is going to be in the mix for a statewide race at some point. And the other name I'm watching is Tom Tiffany, the congressman from the 7th congressional district. I think there's a decent chance he could end up running in this one. But then beyond that, I think, you know, the Republican bench is not nearly as strong as it once was. And I think there are some factions of the party that they're going to have a tough time uniting.
Yeah.
As we've seen in the last couple of statewide races. So I think regardless of who runs, Tammy Baldwin is going to be the favorite. I think she's a terrific senator. She gets into the weeds on details. She does certain things that speak to, you know, all parts of the Democratic Party. She's been a strong candidate statewide. She does well in rural areas, mid-sized areas, blue-collar towns, things like that. Mm-hmm. And so I think regardless who runs against her, she's going to be the favorite, for sure.
844-967-2789. You can call or text with who you think the Republicans will put up to run against Tammy Baldwin. The 414 says, Dan Knodel may want to think about running for that Senate seat. After the results of last week's election show, he could probably lose that seat in 2 years. One other person, can't think of the name offhand, the new county executive in Kenosha County, a former GOP state rep, a dark horse, but a possibility.
I think that's the thing. I don't know if there's, because we had said that seemingly all of a sudden the bench for Democrats seems a little bit deeper. If you think about the governor's race in 4 years from now, of Sarah Godlewski, Sarah Rodriguez, David Crowley, Josh Call. And I guess David Crowley is top of mind because we live in Milwaukee. And so I don't know if there's other county executives on the GOP side that are popular and strong. And we just don't, they haven't made enough, like, you know, the Meyer guy, where I don't know much about him beyond he's rich.
Yeah, you know, things went so well with Tim Michaels getting a business plan to run in a statewide race. Why not run that type of approach back once more? Yeah, I don't know. I think Tiffany is a name to watch right now. I think Gallagher has been so involved at the new Select Committee on China in the House. And, you know, I think any effort that he's putting forward to brand himself as this kind of doer in the House would be scuttled if he were to immediately turn around and start running in a statewide race. So I do think Tiffany is the name to watch right now.
And it's interesting because, and then I want to move on, but it's interesting because when you're a U.S. congressman and you'd make the choice to run, you're also giving up your seat. Because you are either running every 2 years to keep your seat as a representative, or you have to take a big swing and hope that you beat a favorite, Tammy Baldwin. So, without any reason to back this up, there's for some reason I feel like Tom Tiffany would be willing to make that bet versus Mike Gallagher. Like you said, I feel like is a little bit more risk averse, and unless he knew that he had a good chance to win, would not want to necessarily give up the seat that he has in Congress.
Dan, I'm curious what you think Tom Tiffany would run on. What are his big legislative accomplishments? What has he done for Wisconsin that he can crow about?
Freedom.
I mean, are there any legislative accomplishments for any Republicans to run on right now? Even if he was running for re-election in the House, I mean, what exactly? I mean, the first vote he took in the House was to overturn the election. So, you know, he's got that going for him. I just think of the potential candidates. I think, you know, for those Senate races, you look at the House next for somebody to take a step up. And if it's not going to be Gallagher, and I do think Gallagher would probably have the best chance of any of the members of Congress from Wisconsin to win that race. But I think Tiffany is, there's some likelihood of him actually jumping in and running. You know, I'm also wondering if Rebecca Clayfish would consider getting into the mix for this one. I think many on the right consider her kind of a what if candidate for the governor's race. Would she make a run for this one? And then, you know, of course, I think Kevin Nicholson is going to run in every statewide race that he can possibly run in. It's going to be, he'll find a new and creative way to lose an election.
So, Greg, why don't you throw your three out there and see what Dan thinks?
I'm just going to get made fun of now because you mentioned all the names we mentioned, and I said I feel like Scott Walker is dumb enough to throw his name in the ring. I think he's.
Didn't he have the quote a couple weeks ago where he said he would be bored?
That's what I said.
I honestly think power trumps anything, and he is his Twitter presence is he's trying to rebrand himself as more of a firebrand, mega supporting. His Young Americans Foundation. I don't know. I'm not saying he has a chance, and I'm not saying that it's a sure thing, but I wouldn't be surprised because he is dumb enough to do something like this, and he'd get far more attention. I don't put it past the man. I mean, he did once bump his head on a shelf and lose his hair because of it, so I don't know why I said that.
All right, well, let's move
on. I lost my beard, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just exactly. Kept smacking your face on furniture.
My chin on a shelf.
Yeah. So I think the two gentlemen in the conversation are on opposing sides of where Jane and I stand on this conversation. But yesterday, the DNC announced that it is going to Chicago, just south of us. Meanwhile, in Milwaukee, we will be hosting the RNC. And on the one hand, you know, this proves, I think, how important the Midwest is in 2024. But I think both Greg and Dan have feelings about the DNC not coming back to Milwaukee. And so I'll let Dan go first.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I think it was a mistake by the DNC not to immediately turn right around and commit to Milwaukee for 2024 after they were not able to hold the convention in Milwaukee in 2020. I think there was such an opportunity with the DNC in Milwaukee in 2020 to you know kind of recommit to the city and the state after the loss in 2016 and really have an opportunity to tell Milwaukee's story to the country and. You know, we will still have that opportunity in 2024 with the RNC, albeit probably not the story many people want to be telling about Milwaukee as we hurtle toward a situation where the likelihood of Donald Trump being the nominee at that convention seems to be rising as this process continues. But I think it kind of sucks that the National Democrats not only did not come back to Milwaukee for this, but went to Chicago instead. And I think, you know, a lot of the Wisconsin Democrats are putting on this smiley face over the last couple days or whatever, and saying like, yay, the Democrats are focusing on the Midwest. How great is this? We'll be in proximity. We'll be able to get involved. And I think it's just a miss. And I think the national Democrat, I think on the state level, Democrats in Wisconsin have really gotten things together over the past few years. On the national level, maybe not so much. I don't think they supported Mandela Barnes the way they should have. I don't think they did enough in Wisconsin's 3rd congressional district to support Brad Paff there. And I think they're not recognizing the importance of Milwaukee and the importance of Wisconsin by not coming back in 2024.
Greg?
I mean, I pretty much agree with Dan. I will say one thing. I wish I could give you sources, but I feel like, and Dan and Kristen and Jane, you might know this too, but I feel like I was told that there was some pretty deep fighting between the DNC and Milwaukee when all things came to a head, when they decided that they weren't going to do in person, of course, and there was some irreparable damage between the DNC and the Milwaukee officials. And I, you know, to me, the DNC taking it to Chicago is the DNC saying, is flicking us in the air going, well, we're going to go here instead. It's fine.
I did hear some rumors as far as how the Bucks handled getting their money versus striking a deal to have them come back. Yeah. That there may, I think, and that's the thing. Sometimes that's, I think, why I don't always have super strong opinions about these massive decisions that I have zero insight on, the kind of negotiations that happen back doors and how many people are involved in it. Because if that part's true and they, you know, people were a little angry and there's hurt feelings. I don't know.
Yeah,
and I'm just excited because I feel like I do feel more like it's like, well, we can drive and you don't have to fly if we actually wanted to get down to Chicago and be able to do anything for the DNC.
See, and I'm looking forward into having the RNC in Milwaukee so I can infiltrate and go drinking with some of these people, Jane, and find out who they're what they're really like.
Jane's
going to go gonzo on the RNC.
We're just going to put Jane in a MAGA hat. We're sending her down to downtown Milwaukee with a camera and a microphone, and she's just going to start interviewing people, and we're going to have a ton of content. It's going to be
so much fun.
Chef's kiss.
Fear and loathing at Dukes on Water.
Exactly.
All right, when we come back, we will hear Dan Schaefer's takeaways from the election last week, which feels like a while ago already, but stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Gonna be happy bar. Get yourself together.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Here's a fine state. Where would you reside? Not quite to Canada, Great Lakes by her side. Home of Aldo Leopold, Big Sky and Orson Welles. Steve Miller Band, lots of used up shotgun shells. Where everyone's your
welcome neighbor. Back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. Greg Bach is here. And Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area is also here. And you were just in the actual recombobulation area in the airport, because you decided to take off. It's a very wise thing to take off after the election last week. But now that you're back, refreshed, with clear eyes, you have some takeaways and thoughts about what happened last week.
Yeah, I think it was such an important and big and seismic election that I think any, you know, initial reaction that we might have had early next week is not going to really do the full big picture of everything that happened in the spring election justice. And so I think there are a number of important takeaways that we can continue to look at with the results from the spring election and Janet Protasiewicz's landslide, blowout victory in that election. And I think one of the things that I was looking at is just the political geography of her victory. And not only did she perform well outside of the typical Democratic strongholds of Milwaukee and Madison. She did really well in a lot of different parts of the state, in western Wisconsin, in the Fox Valley, the crucial Fox Valley, winning Winnebago, Outagamie, Brown, and Door counties. And I think, you know, it just really speaks to the strength of the Democratic coalition that's building on a statewide level, and the different pockets of, you know, the regions beyond just the Democratic strongholds. And I think we so often hear that Democrats only live in Milwaukee and Madison. Well, I think those I think that is both overstated and underrepresents the fact that there are so many of these mid-sized towns across the state of Wisconsin that do have sizable Democratic coalitions, Democratic majorities even. And I think the fact that the impact of gerrymandering on a state level has shut a lot of those people out of the process on the statewide level in the legislature. So I think that is a really key takeaway from that election. And I think I have a lot of thoughts on I wrote a piece on the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, but I didn't write anything yet on the 8th Senate district. Mm-hmm. And I think there are some really interesting things that happened there. One of them is, you know, we talk so much, you and I, about the impact of gerrymandering on these legislative districts. And I think that is something that has gone a little bit overlooked when we're looking at the very narrow victory by Dan Knodel. You know, there was so much talk of, you know, the weird impeachment thing that he was floating, and like whether that would be a reality and blah, blah, blah. You know, he won by less than 1,000 votes.
I know.
In a district that has been Republican for three decades. And if you look at the last round of the redistricting cycle, you know, my friend John Johnson, who works at Marquette University, calculated the lean of these seats. And this was a district that had a 7.5% Republican advantage in the last round of maps. And as I said, and as we were saying, through these new least change maps, they were not exactly least change in many of these suburban Milwaukee districts. It went from a 7.5% Republican advantage to a 12.5% Republican advantage.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. I thought it was 9. It was 12?
It was 12.
Wow.
Well, that was the formula. There was calculating the 2016 presidential, 2018 gubernatorial, and 2020 presidential. So it did not factor in the 2022 midterms, where Tony Evers did particularly well of the candidates in that district. But, you know, Knodel wins by like 1%, like less than 1,000 votes. And if you look at the way the district changed from last maps to this maps, one of the cities that the gerrymandering process took out of this district was Glendale. So Whitefish Bay is part of this district, but Glendale is not, because, of course, this is a super gerrymandered, weird district that includes the northeast part of Milwaukee County and the southwest part of Washington County. Shouldn't be a district that way, but that's what it is. And they cut out Glendale mostly. And Glendale, in this election, voted 77% for Janet Protasiewicz.
Oh, wow.
Jeez.
Wow.
So if Glendale would have been part of the 8th Senate District instead of some of the Washington County and Waukesha County precincts and wards that were part of this district, I think there's a good chance Haber-Sinikin would have won. So under the old map, under the maps that were from 2011 to 2020, I think that is a map that the Democratic candidate would have won on.
That's super interesting and frustrating.
Yeah, there it is. There's the word.
That is, but there is movement almost immediately. Law Forward announced that they are in the works of doing that, their redistricting lawsuit. And so, you know, I've heard unofficial, you know, off the record timelines that this, like you said before, this could happen by 2024, which feels so fast, but, fingers crossed. And so with the 2 minutes we have left, though, Dan Schaefer, 414 Day, Milwaukee Day.
Oh, that's right.
Is on Friday. Yep. And you are having your huge sale for the recombobulation area. So tell people how they can get their sale subscription price for all the good reporting you do.
That's right. It's our biggest sale of the year. We've done it every year in Milwaukee Day. We do 41.4% off for the 414. Which means that you can get a full year subscription to the Recombobulation Area for less than $30. It's usually a $50 value. You can subscribe monthly for less than $3 a month. That's usually $5 a month. And we've had some terrific momentum at the Recombobulation Area lately. We've got a ton of new subscribers. This is a wonderful time to upgrade to paid. So please do check in and take advantage of that deal. 41.4%
It's a fire sale.
All right, well, next time you're on, we'll have to talk more about the Bucks because that our playoffs kicks off on Sunday. Dan Schaefer, thank you so much for joining us. Can't wait to read your takeaway from last week. We'll see you soon, friend.
Thanks so much. Go Bucks.
Go Bucks. Bucks and six. All right, we'll come back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Times when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows? And what's on the other side?
Welcome Rainbow. Back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Mattenair. Greg Mike has moved off the mic. Greg Bach has moved off the mic to make room for our next guests. Sarah has been here multiple times. Sarah Harrison, concerned Waukesha parent, but also Dave Dringenberg is also here, concerned Waukesha parent, to talk about the Alliance for Education in Waukesha. And you may not have heard of the group officially, but you've certainly, if you listen to this show, are aware of the ongoing concerns that many parents have with the Waukesha School Board and decisions that have been made. And the probably the most recent one that got the most attention since there was celebrities involved is Rainbow Land and a first grade class not being allowed to sing a Miley Cyrus song because it's controversial. But that is just the most recent case in a long line of things that have been happening in the school district. And so now there is a lot of organizing going on as far as the Alliance, and you guys released a press release this week. It seems like there's some more press coming. And so wanted to have you guys on to talk more about the goals of the organization, what the priorities are, and also I think any takeaways you've learned as you've been organizing as parents, because I don't think what's happening is in Waukesha is a unique situation, both in Wisconsin or even nationally, as far as school boards that are maybe overreaching. Is that the word that you would use? And so let's just start with either, and either of you can start as far as where, kind of like the background of how we got to where we are right now.
I would say that the whole involvement with school board from a community perspective started with COVID and what precautions were being taken in schools, what parents felt about those precautions. The Alliance itself is, it's really just a ragtag group of parents, I would say, that said, you know what, we're going to draw a line in the sand about the things that we believe to be right for our kids in schools. And that really is focused around safe and healthy and productive learning environments, but also it's about supporting staff. Like, we love our teachers. Mm-hmm. We love our principals. We want there to be civil discourse, conversation about what should be happening in schools. And so this ragtag group of parents got together and started talking about, you know, what do we envision for the district? Kind of where we grabbed our foothold was the lunch issue. So back in August of 2021, we went from this, no one knew what we were doing, to we were on every news station advocating for universal free lunch for every student in the district when Waukesha was the one district in the state to opt out of free lunches.
Mm-hmm. What was their reason again for that?
We don't want the kids to be spoiled by a piece of crappy pizza.
Yeah. I mean, come
on. Yeah. Right.
No offense to lunch. I'm sorry to all the lunch workers. The pizza is lovely. It's not
great. and so we went from this, no one knew what we were doing or who we were. Maybe we didn't even have an identity.
Yeah.
To we were on every news station that week. We were in the Washington Post. I was on WGN radio that Friday afternoon after the rally. And you go, wow, what just happened? And I think we found our identity as a group of parents concerned out of that. And it's kind of evolved into this. You know, we're a watchdog group. We've got so many parents that are keeping an eye on things as far as Right now, you mentioned the press release. It's a bias in our schools against students and teachers that are LGBTQ.
Sarah, do you have anything?
Yeah. Yeah. So I wasn't involved with the Alliance until probably 4 or 6 months ago, because when I was running for school board, I wasn't coordinating with them. I had no idea how much stuff you guys were doing behind the scenes. It's amazing to me how much information you guys have put together, and I'm grateful to be part of the group now. And I do want to throw out there that Rainbowland is fantastic in terms of the fact that it's getting us lots of attention to what's going on. There are deep-rooted issues, but Rainbowland is a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
That's not our battle cry, is to get this song back. It's something we're able to use to draw attention to things that are happening that are policy-based actions that are biased against our LGBTQ staff and students.
And so I guess that's the next question is, you said watchdog group. And so is it basically being able to have the school board and administration and even other parents who maybe support the school board know that, like, we are going to make a stink every time we feel like there is an overreach or bullying or disregard for a protected group of students? Or is there bigger priorities as far as, obviously, maybe the next time there's a school board, because Diane Voigt did just win as far as, like, flipping the school board. But as far as, like, as an organized group that went from kind of a ragtag bunch.
We're still ragtag.
Still ragtag. But as far as, like, what do you feel like priorities are with the newfound attention and maybe organization?
Sure. I think watchdog is part of it. Like, we have parents that are always watching every meeting, whether it's these little committees or it's the full school board. But then it's also putting those, what we see, into action, from making a stand for students that are LGBTQ. We've helped with playground installation. We've done a food drive for the community. I think there's meat to the story here. It's more than just making a press release and throwing it to the wolves and seeing who picks up on it. It's about making sure that our schools are safe and productive. And whatever form we can do that, whether it is speaking to the media, whether it is, we put in our press release, we have talked to the Department of Justice, the Civil Rights Division. We have talked to Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction on this. We're trying to follow through with more than just a press release, because a press release might get coverage, but it doesn't fundamentally change what's happening in the schools. And I think we try to engage school board members about these topics, and because they don't see eye to eye with us, they choose not to listen or respond. Mm-hmm. And that's where the press release, like, if they would just talk to us or have conversation with us, I don't think the press releases would be necessary whatsoever. But because they won't engage, they're dug in so politically that we've changed school board from policy driven to politically driven, that we're harming the educational process in Waukesha because of it.
And so that was going to be my question as far as, because I was interested in what the follow-up was going to be with so much national attention on Rainbowland, and kind of what from the administrative or school board side of it, if they were just going to kind of wait it out because the news cycle moves on pretty quickly as far as people have shortest attention spans. And so even though it's a symptom, but there was a lot of attention that was brought to the Waukesha School District, to that elementary school. And so what was the reaction? And it sounds like potentially there was no conversation. So what did they say?
So I did get a response from one of our board members that said, this would be better to talk about in person. I said, great. When do you want to talk? And they said, well, after it's resolved, maybe in a month or so. Well, after it's resolved isn't when you talk about these things, right? So
what was the resolution?
I don't know.
What does resolve look like in this scenario?
I mean, I guess the resolution is kids get to sing Rainbow Connection, but that's not the problem we really want to talk about. We're calling for the school board to remove the anti-LGBTQ bias from policies and from actions that are stemming from the policies in terms of how things are implemented, such as the removal of safe space signs as being a controversial issue. That shouldn't be a controversial issue. We want them to put those things back. And we also want them to reinstate the diversity team that was put on pause in August 2021.
What was that?
The diversity, educational
equity.
Leadership. Equity. Thank you.
Equity, the CRT team.
Leadership.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. Exactly. You uncovered the plot. Yeah. No, diversity, equity, leadership team.
Well,
and what is, I mean, you might, even if you don't have the numbers off the top of your head, but obviously, Sarah, you've come on the show and been very honest about your kids who are part of the LGBTQ community, mm-hmm. but also like so often it feels like the two kind of go hand in hand in the last two plus years as far as what's been going on in school districts. There's one hand, diversity when it comes to race mm-hmm. and teaching about that, teaching inclusion about that, teaching empathy about that. And there's also different but same with all of the trans attacks and the LGBTQ stuff. And so do you see the two overlapping together with what you guys are working on?
Yeah, it's absolutely an intersectional effort where we want everyone to feel welcome and safe in our schools. It's not just about one specific group. It's about everyone feeling welcomed into the educational process. Because if you're sitting in a, excuse me, if you're a kid sitting in a classroom and you're worried about being bullied or being excluded, you're not focused on algebra and mm-hmm. you're not getting the educational experience that you should be getting.
Our guests are Sarah Harrison and Dave Dreigenberg, who are with the Alliance for Education in Waukesha. And Dave, I have to laugh when you call yourself a ragtag bunch of parents who got together, but you are actually genuinely a grassroots organization as opposed to some of these other groups like Moms for Liberty, which are not. And they're the ones who are kind of driving a lot of these policies. Is that correct?
You mean George Soros isn't bankrolling you guys?
I mean, I hate to give us up, but no, of course not. We
have, waiting for that check to clear. Right. I don't know.
We have no budget. We have no hierarchical leadership. Like just really whoever shows up to a meeting or whoever chips in on a press release or whomever, hey, I'm going to answer the email. Like we just make it happen some way. None of us are paid. We all just, it's so important to us, Jane, that we make time for it because our kids are important to us. And especially, like you mentioned the marginalized kids, Sarah, like mm-hmm. those kids that maybe don't have as much of a voice to begin with, we want to make sure they have that voice too. And that's often the criticism we get from the school board is, oh, you're only speaking up for one segment of kids. No, we're speaking up for the kids that have a tough time speaking up for themselves. Mm-hmm. Or bullied because of their sheer existence. You know, we talked with a student not that long ago, and they said, my existence as an LGBTQ person is not political. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. My kids are pretty young. They're in elementary school. Mm-hmm. I don't know who they will be attracted to, who they're going to love. But I know if they were attracted to someone of their same gender, that I would not feel comfortable sending them to Waukesha schools right now.
Wow.
And that's, I think, the goal of this ragtag group of parents is to make sure that every kid would feel welcome.
And so speaking of the parents, because I think often, and maybe it's changing because we're seeing more and more engagement, I think, across political levels, local, state, nation. But I would imagine that when you go to a school board meeting and the parents who are there, it's the people who are the most engaged on, but also on the both, like the ends of the spectrum potentially. And so when you have the conversations with parents who are not showing up in, you know, offensive t-shirts or, you know, because I say that because I specifically saw one on the Waukesha School Board TikTok. But, you know, so there's obviously the parents whose minds are not going to change. But what has been the reaction to the noise you're making to more of the, I don't want to say apathetic, we'll say busy. Right. We'll say not as, don't have as much of a dog in the fight.
It's always,
parents.
I had no idea.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
To sit around and watch a school board meeting on YouTube, like some school night, like no one wants to
do it. No one wants to do that.
But then if you do watch it and you're like, oh my gosh, they're trying to ban books. Or, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, like they're taking away autonomy from kids that are transgender. Like that doesn't seem right. And those Rainbow Land instances or the school lunch instance, those help bring involvement, I think, for maybe that middle section that might be detached from involvement right now.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk a little bit more about that on the way back, because I think that is super interesting as far as the silent middle, if mm-hmm. we want to call it that, yeah. as far as people, there's a lot more of those people, and how do we engage them? All right, this is As Goes Wisconsin. We will keep the conversation going about the Alliance for Education in Waukesha in just a minute. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair, and we are talking to Sarah Harrison and Dave Dringenberg from the Alliance for Education in Waukesha. And they have been very involved in standing up to some of the things that have been happening in the Waukesha School Board District, or the Waukesha School District, with the Waukesha School Board, and when it comes to disregard, bullying, targeting LGBTQ students, even some teachers who are trying to. I actually saw this. So the first grade teacher who originally had a kind of was the whistleblower and made it known on Twitter that Rainbow Land had gotten axed is on administrative leave right now.
Yep, they did that. Yeah,
and so I saw that yesterday. As far as, and I think I was wondering what the ramifications for her was going to be, because I got to talk to her on the phone a little bit, and she was great, but she also did not seem like she was backing down or really scared of any ramifications that were going to happen to her, which is great. But also, I was wondering if the shoe was going to drop.
I think everyone's got a line in the sand that they draw and say, you know what, this is as much as I can take. I'm not going to speak for her or really even about that. But all I'll say is I think we all have a line in the sand to draw and say, enough's enough. And I think, like you said, this group of parents that calls themselves the Alliance for Education in Waukesha, I think everyone stands up for things that they believe in. I think that helps guide the group. Maybe as far as what our lines in the sand are. I know that special ed in the district is going to be something that's coming up that we feel like the district isn't giving that enough attention. You know, there was the Joint Committee on Finance last week that met in Waukesha. One of the big things that's being pushed there are two big things, I would say. One of them is special ed reimbursement from the state, because it's dropped to like, I think, 30% from what the district spends. And really, it should be about 60%. And I think that's something that, like, I know our school board and superintendent are all on board with. But another thing I know came up was, again, universal free lunch last week. And that's where community involvement comes in, is like, who's going to know that we stand for these things unless we stand up for them ourselves and encourage our friends and the parents in the drop-off line at school or pickup line to do those same kinds of things, is to speak up. The question is always, what is it that we do?
Yeah. And so, speaking of something that you are doing tonight, there is a rally.
Yes, we are rallying in support of our LGBTQ community here in Waukesha, and specifically in the Waukesha community, in the Waukesha School District, and telling them that, you know, we see you, we appreciate you, we support you, and we're going to sing a little song for them, too.
Which song?
Well, you'll be shocked to learn. That we're going to sing Rainbow Land.
No.
I know.
How'd you come up with that? Maybe an encore of Rainbow Connection after that?
Maybe.
Where is it going to be?
So it's at the Lindholm Building, which is
222 Maple Avenue in downtown Waukesha.
So is it right around here?
It is right around the corner. I saw pictures last night on social media that apparently someone took the opportunity to draw some rainbows on the sidewalk in front of the building.
Fantastic. We love that.
And it's in sidewalk chalk, so it's not permanent.
It's not spray paint.
Yeah, right.
And so if anyone's listening right now and they want to get more information, where can they find that?
So I would say probably they can go to the Facebook page for the Alliance. Mm-hmm.
Alliance Waukesha is the website, alliancewaukesha.org. You can find email. You can see the press releases. You can be in touch if you want to show up tonight and need more information. But also if you're a parent in the district who would like to have a voice or speak up for something. And I also think it's a great way for other communities to connect as well. You know, we talked about that during the
and break. I was going to, because this is, you know, we air all across the state right now. And I don't think, while I think Waukesha, because we're here, we've given a lot of attention to, but I don't think this is a unique story. Obviously, no. Keel, Wisconsin has gone through similar things last year. I've heard different things in Kettle Moraine. Like, I've heard similar stories happen across the state as far as school board members, diversity issues, trans, LGBTQ. And so I guess as the advice you might have to other ragtag parents, as you guys have been able to work on this, come together, get some great press for it. So I guess what advice or even a playbook would you give to people who are outside of Waukesha who are inspired by what you guys have been able to do so far?
So there's an old adage that says, when someone tells you who they are, believe them. And I think people need to really pay attention to what activities are happening in their schools. And if something looks like a red flag and a warning that your school is going down a bad path, it probably is. So take action early. Have folks who are aligned with your views that are willing to run for school board and support them and vocalize for them and organize for them. We see that WIS Red is organizing and getting a lot of folks onto school boards. They only got two this time in Waukesha because we got Diane Voigt. But we know there's a concerted, very organized effort on the other side of this issue. We have to counter-organize or we will never have a voice at the table.
The only thing I'd add to that would be don't expect someone else to do the work. Mm-hmm. Don't expect someone else to be the voice that speaks up. Often it's incumbent upon, if you know what is the old adage, if you see something, say something. Mm-hmm. I mean,
and in New York City subway sign. Right.
I think that's why I got involved, because I wasn't sure if everyone felt comfortable speaking up, and I knew I had a voice. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage everyone out there to use the voice, connect with parents that you know. Like I said, have those conversations at the drop-off line or the pickup line at school or whatever that might be, just to say, how is it you see things unfolding in our district right now?
Don't make assumptions about where other parents stand.
Yes. You read my mind. Sometimes those conversations are intimidating and a little bit scary because I've talked to so many folks who say, oh, I thought I was just this blue dot in a red sea. And it's not, I'm not trying to make it all binary political. It's not about that. But folks assume that people around them might not be on the same side of an issue. You know what? Have a conversation. Find out.
But there's also opportunity for purple there, too.
Yes. I think
there are common grounds as far as, like, I mean, the whole lunch issue was a purple issue for probably 95% of Waukesha. There was the 5% that was, they're going to be against it just because maybe the Alliance was speaking up. but I think things like special ed, a blank goal of ours to be healthy and safe is purple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, so much of this shouldn't be political, right?
No.
It's just helping kids have the best environment possible to learn in.
Preach.
So, all right.
Preach.
Yes. Snaps. All right. Dave Dringenberg, Sarah Harrison, thank you so much for your work. Thank you for joining us today. Can't wait to hear more about the progress that you guys have.
Thanks
for having us.
All right. We'll take a break for the top of the hour news. And when we come back, Wisconsin dive bars. What's the criteria to be a Wisconsin dive bar? We're going to talk about it. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.